Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I sat down with Shaik Lawas, COO and co-founder of Satoki Mining, to talk about operations and maintenance as well as his company overall. Enjoy the show. Welcome back. Hey, Shaik, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, brother. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been trying to do this for quite some time. I know you guys have a lot of going on marketing wise as well. And we met a couple of times, so I'm finally happy we can finally do this. Before we get started and hop right in, just share my screen quick. If you are listening on audio, this is the time to pull up the video. We are recording at 896298 block height, and then we are currently at 55 hash price again. And in Bitcoin terms, let's see, fees have been somewhat stable again. Difficulty went down.
Hash price is looking good.
Yeah, man. And we had like 53,000 sats if my eyesight doesn't deceive me. What do you think about hash price action over the last couple weeks or so?
I'd say it's getting closer to where we need it. I think anytime we have hash price sub $50, we're definitely feeling pain in the market. What are we at right now? 54, 55?
55, yeah. 55.
Yeah. I would say this is where, you know, some of the pressure starts to ease off the market a bit, especially people that are on the lower side of the economic scale of mining.
Yeah.
It's getting more comfortable, I'd say.
In one of the live last episodes, there's a clip that I just saw of myself. I talked about how hash price can go up much faster in dollar terms, of course, pulled up by Bitcoin price. And this is currently what we're seeing, right? The price just shoots up over a couple of weeks from 75 to 104. And it feels like this is the start of something, you know, and you know, hash price going to 60, 70 is not out of the question in the short term. If hash price is below 40 and people unplug their machines and maybe like pack them away and start recycling and stuff like that, right? If you have like this run up, it's really easy for people to plug their machines back in quickly, which you will know everything about because that's your daily bread and butter, right? And I feel like if there's sort of a prolonged period of where hash price is lower, so let's see, like this is the 3 months, you know, we've been pretty much below 50 since March with like brief specs close to the 50 edge, and then people start putting it away, I think, maybe, or whatever. What do you think? Why do you think pain is below 40, below 50?
I would say in general, with a lot of the hash rate run we saw towards the end of 24 in the first few months of this year, a lot of that was fleet refreshes from some of the larger players. And while we did see a lot of hash rate growth, I think, what did we top out at? Did we cross the, is that a hash mark?
I think that depends on the average that you look at. You caught me. How I know.
Anyways, you know, we saw a lot of people upgrading their fleet, right? And we saw hash rate taking a large run. And while price did take a large run as well, in the last 2 years, the amount of hash rate we've seen come online, by this point in the cycle, we would already be seeing sexier, quote unquote, margins. But at this point, it's we definitely need to see a run in price for economics to get to see some greed in the hash price market, I would say.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. Yeah, before we got started here, Shaik, because you just said greed in the hash price market, what you talked about mining culture, because we currently have this op return thing going on I would say maybe more mainstream Bitcoin Twitter, right? That's more focal point. What do you think the mining culture around that is greatly? Do you speak to folks in the industry? What are their sort of viewpoints?
Yeah, as I was mentioning earlier, I think as the mining industry has grown, we've actually seen a divergence from the overall quote unquote Bitcoin community and the mining community. And nowadays, I don't think you hear as many conversations as far as what's going on with Bitcoin Core, what's going on with the overall Bitcoin picture in the mining industry as you used to. You know, the mining industry really burst about 10 years ago, I would say, from people that were really deep into Bitcoin culture and everything that surrounds that, right? And nowadays you see people that maybe joined in the space purely from they were an energy prior or they were interested in Bitcoin mining as an industry, but they might not be as passionate Bitcoiners, right? So I think with over time, we might see some of these conversations come back in the Bitcoin mining community, especially as we talk about hash rate centralization. And while some people might think it's not as relevant because they trust that things will just keep working out, if you see something even close to a 51% attack start happening in the market, I think you'll see a lot of the bigger players start to get a lot more focused as to what's happening behind the curtain and hash rate and where what pool they're sending their hash rate to, et cetera. But I would say as of right now, I don't see it being as discussed offline between people in the mining game.
Of course, like you don't grow to nearly a zettahash on average from nothing, right? I think yes, the first sort of couple exahashes, they're very altruistically driven, maybe more so than the later ones or the latter ones. And there's this funny convergence, right, between decentralization and the centralization of big financial powers that you need to build megawatt, gigawatt scale sites. And there's certain interests that come with that, right? And certainly investors will not have the health of the Bitcoin ecosystem front and center at heart. They want their returns. And I feel like, and I said this a couple of times, and maybe to you as well, like I feel like the mining industry, part due to necessity is the most fiat driven short-term thinking part of the whole Bitcoin ecosystem, because it's all about revenue per kilowatt hour, and everything else comes behind, or is sort of underneath that. Do you agree?
100%. Absolutely.
Shaik, before we delve deeper, tell the folks who you are from your perspective, and tell them what you do at Satoki and what Satoki does.
Absolutely. So Shaik Lauer's here, COO and one of the co-founders of Satoki Mining. Team came together about 3 years ago. I myself and my two co-founders, Jay Zapata and Omar Alatorre. We all come from an energy background. I myself come from the battery storage development space. Partner Jay comes from financial positions and oil and gas midstream companies. And other co-founder Omar comes from operations background with working on large wind renewable energy farms. And it was really that intersection of Bitcoin mining meeting traditional energy markets and resources that really inspired us to come together and start Satoki. And let's call it quit the day jobs and go all into what we're building here.
I love it,
But on the
man.
Satoki side, everything end to end in the Bitcoin mining space from site origination, site development. And what's really kept us busy over the last 12 months is third-party site operations. Everything from finding sites, building sites, and running sites day to day is where we spend our time and provide value in the market.
Why do you think there is such a need to, and we want to focus on operations, right? I want to dig deeper into that part of the value chain and understand more details around like how operations work, what processes you have and stuff like that. Why do you think there's such a need? Why do people not bring the skill set themselves if they do decide to go invest in into the space?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think why it's super important is because I would say my team kind of came into the Bitcoin mining game a bit backwards from other people, where a lot of Bitcoin miners might have came from IT or the technical side of or software background, and they've had to learn energy and large infrastructure operations. That was actually our bread and butter from day one, right? When you come from a true energy infrastructure background, operations was in our blood from day one. And I think that's what's really allowed us to scale when it comes to building teams and optimizing operations, right? And in the broader ecosystem, I would say a few years ago, you had a lot of talk in the market of a lot of people saying that they were fully integrated, they were the best operators in the space. But when it really comes down to it, man, operations sucks. It is not fun, right? You're managing lots of people, managing lots of infrastructure, and it's hard. It's 24/7. These operations don't go to sleep. And I think we've seen a lot of players in the space and a lot of up-and-comers, instead of trying to pretend that they're fully integrated and that they know what they're doing, in the end, they want to stick to what they know. And some groups, financial optimization might be where they have an edge, right? And I think it's smart to realize your strategy. It's like, hey, if you're not a good operator, or you don't already have someone on your team that's done, that has an operational background, and you have, let's call it, a pool of people to pull from to build your operations team, it's not going to be easy. So I think that's where a lot of people are making a decision. Hey, we're not going to be fully integrated. We're going to lean on vendors and partners in the space that are better than us in certain aspects. And I think we'll continue to see that as the space matures.
What makes a good operation on a mining site, Chuck? If you have to pick the top three things that you look for, if you had to judge somebody else's operation, what would you be looking for?
I would say number one, it definitely comes down to infrastructure. The quality of infrastructure that's being built is probably one of the most important variables when it comes to operations, especially as most of the capacity that we operate today is in the state of Texas. As most people know, Texas is not, let's call it, friendly to running computers,
It
right?
gets hot
Especially
and it
when
gets very cold. Yeah.
exactly, gets extremely hot, can get extremely cold, extremely humid in many parts of the state. So if a facility's infrastructure is not well suited for that, day one, operations is going to be a lot harder. Moving in the future, it's going to require more people, more man hours, more fleet repairs, et cetera. So I would say infrastructure is a very big part of that, right? Number two, operations at the end of the day is people. People is what operations is. Yes, there is software and tools and equipment that one may be able to use to make themselves more efficient. But at the end of the day, it's really the operations team and the managers overseeing that team. What's their expertise, right? In operations, you kind of have two pieces. You have the energy and the infrastructure side of things, and then you have more of the technical aspect of mining, right? As far as, do they know how to read miner logs? Does an operator know how to rebuild their network from scratch if they're having network issues, et cetera? So I would really say it's the quality of infrastructure. And then number two, it's the people. And the people that's making up an operational team, they really need to know what they're doing, right? I don't care how good your operations team, if they really know the technical aspect of mining, but if you have PDUs start messing up, or your transformer and voltages on site are having issues, do they know how to do a root cause analysis on that? Do they know how to work with electrician teams to identify the issues going on site? So I would really say it's the quality of infrastructure and then the subject matter expertise that's held within teams. And I think it's very rare with teams in the industry, maybe outside of the public companies, that they have all of that subject matter expertise in-house.
Do you have a third? Third
Do you have a
point?
third?
Quality of
What else is important?
infrastructure, people on the ground.
I would say team culture definitely matters as well. I would say Bitcoin mining is a lot different than other industries, right? It's a lot more grassroots, not as corporate, and I think that's definitely necessary because it takes a lot to operate these facilities and for them to be optimized. And also, a lot of this is more cutting edge. You know, more than 10 years ago, there were data centers, but Bitcoin mining at scale was not taking place. So we're all learning, and I don't care who you are, no one knows everything, right? Even Satoki, we learn new stuff every single day. And I'd say certain teams that maybe we bump into in the industry at times, if you don't have that learn first approach and you're not willing to be wrong at times and have that culture built within your team, when you run into issues, that might affect how you find solutions or work, have collaboration with others in the space that you may be able to learn from or utilize to build out your internal knowledge.
On the first point, infrastructure, what makes good infrastructure? When you look at a site, when is infrastructure quote unquote bad and well designed? What makes that?
I mean, at the end of the day, we're all trying to keep chips cool, right? When chips start getting hot and these machines are getting hot, that's when you start seeing issues, hashboard failures, fan failures, PSU failures, et cetera. I would say purchasing quality infrastructure is super important. You know, with Bitcoin mining, everything is kind of that run to zero, building out as cost effective as possible. However, some people might say, hey, our all-in cost of building a site is 120,000 a megawatt. I'm like, that's awesome. That's super cost effective. Let's see how good your site runs when summer rolls around, right? How much CFM do your fans have in each of your containers or warehouse that are keeping your fans cool? If you're using water curtains, how well is your infrastructure running, right? Do you have a facility maintenance team that can quickly mitigate issues if something breaks, right? Going on a bit of a tangent here, your question was around quality of infrastructure. I would say in a facility, when something starts breaking or something's not working properly, there's a lot of problems downstream of that, right? And also the amount of time that it can take to fix that main issue can cause forever issues downstream of that, right? Because once a fleet starts having issues or you've already caused a certain amount of damage to that fleet, it's going to take more man hours and more TLC to keep that fleet running at optimal hash rate forever in the future, right? So I would say quality of infrastructure definitely has to do with the ability to keep machines cool. And that's probably the biggest issue that I see with sites and operations, especially here south in the state of Texas, right? Is how well can you keep these machines cool? How much airflow is going in each container or through each shelf on a warehouse to keep those machines cool? Some people have water curtains, but what about when it's middle of July and your water curtains quit working? Are you going to shut down the mine or are you going to keep it running, right? So,
So a big part of this would be quality, like, you know, what quality does a transformer have in general? Is it a well-built one or is it a, you know, cheap one to save the bottom line? Which at the end of the day, you could argue, you know, if you choose to save everywhere and your machine or your site runs for 3 years, that's not very cost effective if you have to keep dumping money into it after the fact, right? It depends on your time horizon. And so it's not just quality of equipment, you know, using quality transformers, switch gears, whatever, cabling. It's also the way it's designed, the way the trenching is done, the way the containers are designed, the way the warehouses are designed. Would you agree? Is that
absolutely
okay?
Absolutely.
All right. And then second, you mentioned people management, people on the ground and stuff like that. How do you do capacity building? Was going to be my follow-up question there. Do you make sure, because I mean, you guys are growing. We're going to get into the marketing bit just now because you've managed to make what you deem a very quote-unquote unsexy part of the industry more that. And so you guys are growing. You guys are still around, of course. And so therefore you need more people, right? You can't send the same folks to twice as many sites. So how do you tackle that? How do you tackle capacity building to make sure that second point is, focus and center?
Yeah, scaling operations teams definitely is not something that's easy to do. And I would say having a really strong recruiting base is super important, right? Even if we're like, let's say having a few months where we're not growing as much, we're not really slowing down our recruiting efforts, right? We always have our recruiting teams and our management team always talking to people in the labor market, right? We're building relationships with local technical schools or local community colleges, right? We're always going to have hiring positions up and online, even if maybe we're not hiring for a position at that exact moment, because we need to be talking to people that are going to be in our hiring pipeline. We need to be getting to know them, right? Also, leveraging your network is super important, right? There's people that maybe we've done business with in the past that work with other companies and they reach out to us saying, hey, I have a buddy, he's worked in the space for 3 years. He just left his last gig. He's looking for a new opportunity in the space. And I would say here in the last like 3 months, that's been super crucial for us is leveraging our network and getting referrals and references for people to come and join the team. And sometimes we hire a technician or a new site manager, and he's like, "Hey, I've been on the team 3 months now. I've really enjoyed it. Is it possible for me to bring on some of my friends from the last company I was at?" Absolutely. So.
Awesome. What do you look for when, of course, like if somebody worked at a Bitcoin mine before, and that's obviously key, and that's a good building block. If I come fresh out of uni, what do I need to bring to be a potential candidate to have, good grounds, basics?
I would say understanding of electrical theory is super important, right? Understanding what voltage and amperage is even if someone isn't working on the infrastructure directly, being on a facility, this stuff can be dangerous. So, do they understand infrastructure? Have they ever worked on electrical components before, right? People that come from an IT or a networking background actually have a really strong start because a lot of what we do every day, or from site everyday operations is network monitoring, right? And using the tools and technical resources available to identify what's causing issues on site. Anyone that comes from an IT networking background, maybe they were an electrical apprentice in the past, maybe they used to do any kind of blue collar or industrial work in the past, because these sites are not, they're not fun to work at, they're not sexy, right? And we've actually had a lot of success, and some of our best technicians to date that we hired over a year ago had no understanding what Bitcoin mining was. They did not come from an IT background by any means. We've actually hired kids that are 18 years old straight out of high school, but they're super hungry, they're willing to learn, they're willing to travel. And I'd say really anyone that has that grit and that willingness to learn attitude could usually find some success within our operations teams. But it's also very important to have technical knowledge, whether that's on the infrastructure and electrical side or more on the IT and networking side.
Do you outsource repairs or do you do that in-house?
Specifically, hashboard repair.
Oh, any
Yeah,
repair.
we have a small. Yeah, so everything outside of hashboard and PSU repair, we do on site for our clients, and that's included in our everyday, I would say, quote unquote, operations package. As far as part replacements and smaller repairs, we do have a smaller hashboard repair shop in northern Oklahoma, but it depends on the size of repair work that's being needed, right? If a client calls us and they say, "Hey, we have 5,000 S19s or S21s that are needing repair," we're likely going to leverage some of our partners or other vendors in the space to get that done in a quick fashion. But we do have a smaller repair center in
Okay.
Oklahoma that we do offer repair services.
And to find faults or machines that need work, what do the processes look like, from a day-to-day on the ground perspective? Do you look at software first and foremost? Do you run through the shelves to see where the red LEDs are on? Like, what does a daily operation look like? People get in, clock in. What do they do, like, physically on the ground? Can you describe that a little bit?
Absolutely. So the management team every single day is going to have a daily plan for the team as far as like, "Hey, this is what we've been working on this week. This is what our goals are." But kind of, I'm going to split that up into two answers there. There's usually a goal on site as far as like, "Hey, what's causing the biggest issues?" Or like, "Hey, which containers or parts of the warehouse are going to need their filter swap this week? Are there any fan replacements that need to be done?" And let's call it. That's the bigger jobs, the hairier task on site that the team's usually focused on. But as far as day-to-day diagnosing machine issues, that's definitely starts on the software side. I mean, whether you're using Foreman, Load, Linkcoin, or any other miner management system, you're definitely gonna have data in front of you, right, on the network that you're monitoring that's showing you the machines that are offline. And once you have a report in front of you that says, "Hey, on the site, these are the machines that are down," you're usually going to dispatch different technicians to go work on different parts of the site, right? And then from there, it can be a whole list of issues that they're seeing, right? Is it, "Hey, some machines are having issues coming back from a curtailment and they just need a hard reset?" other fans that are broken, and we need to pull these off the shelf and get other people on the team working on fan swaps, et cetera. I would say from that point, it depends on what the issues are on site. But overall, it really starts on the network man or the network monitoring side. And then from there, people on site will be dispatched to go and do RCA and fix the issues that are seen.
Hashred Up is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HashredUp. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content.
Okay, interesting. And so as a management team, you sit on a Monday and look at every site, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so I think this is where it'd be pretty important for me to provide some more context as to what Satoki's operations look like. So we do develop and operate our own facilities, our own co-location facilities or hosting facilities in which we own all the infrastructure and we're managing other people's machines that were sent to our site, right? However, the vast majority of what we operate, I just did the math yesterday, but we had 186 megawatts that we're operating to date. We got operations spread around all over the place, right? We operate sites as small as 8 megawatts, I think is our smallest. And then our largest is at 55 megawatts. And these are spread between different states. And the approach that we take is we usually have a site manager or a site lead at every single site. And that person is going to have a close relationship to our director level and VP level team that oversees operations, right? And I would say week to week, the, let's call it, operations leadership team is going to be on the same page. They're going to be having their weekly meetings talking about each site. Hey, what's causing the issues here? What sites are performing well? And we're comparing strategies and let's call it operational efficiency methods between sites just to make sure everyone's on the same page. Hey, what are we learning here? What issues are we seeing here? That ensures that at the top level of our operations team, everything's in cohesion. We're on the same page with what's going on. And then from there, that trickles down to the individual site leads or site managers that are making up the daily operating plan for the technicians at each specific site. And for a smaller site, you may only have two technicians that are there working on that site with a remote site manager, right? Or with our larger sites, you might have 8 or 9 technicians there every single day. So it really depends on which facility are we talking about. Is this a Satoki-owned facility? Is it a client's facility? At a client facility, there may be a facilities operations team that we're working with hand in hand, right? Or we might be providing both facilities and miner management on the Satoki side. So it really depends on which particular facility that we're discussing. Or
yeah, it doesn't also matter where people live, Shaikh, because like if you have technicians that have to be at a site every day, right, and it's a client site, you know, you need technicians that live close by. Right. I imagine that limits your talent pool quite a bit. Imagine you have a site where you don't have any employees living nearby. Right now you need to hire somebody. These guys say, no, bring your own team. How do you handle that? Have you had that issue before?
Absolutely. That's issues that we tackle daily. Right. I would say that as you and many of the listeners likely know, many of these facilities are in very remote areas, right? And if one of us or our clients is spinning up a new site, we immediately begin hiring local technicians in that area. But however, within Satoki, what's allowed us to be so flexible and scale so much throughout the last year is we have a certain group on our team that we call our road dogs, right? That they might live in Texas, they might live in Oklahoma, they might live somewhere else, but they are down to go on the road at any moment in time. We're going to buy or we're going to get an apartment. We're going to rent an Airbnb, right? So the managers and technicians have a place to live. And so our road team and our traveling managers allow us to spin up sites anywhere, right? And during those first few months of operations, which we'll call quote unquote the stabilization phase, that's where we're really bringing in the local people that we're finding that live in the area. We're training them up. And we usually retain one of our managers in the area long term to make sure everything's up to par and meeting our standards before we pull any of our travel team away.
How does somebody graduate from being a technician to a site manager? What does that look like?
Yeah, so there's definitely very specific tech progressions that we have outlined in the training curriculum. Also, I'm kind of stealing some thunder from my really badass operations leadership team. I focus on a lot of the site origination and site development efforts. So I really wish Omar was on the call to go into a bit more detail
next
as
time.
Far as what tech progressions and the specifics look like. But I would say we have tech ones, which is more entry level. We have tech twos, right? And then we have site leads or tech threes. It really depends on what management level responsibilities are taken over on their end. And then it comes to site managers, right? To me, outside of the technical specifics, moving from a tech one to a tech two to a tech lead to a site manager, it really comes down to one's ability to work autonomously or work independently, right? Does that person have the ability to walk up to a site without someone telling them what to do that day? And understanding the priorities to make that site work efficiently and be optimized, right? So moving from like a tech one or a tech two to site management, it's the ability to maybe lead or teach others, right? Because sometimes you have a technician that might be super strong and they can work really well independently, but maybe when it comes to teaching or training others, that's not their strong suit, right? For someone to be a true site lead or site manager, they must have the ability to work well with others, understand what's going on site end to end, from a very particular miner that's having issues all the way to the major electrical infrastructure on site, right? They have the ability to lead a team, right? And handle, let's call it the people issues that pop up when you have teams working together, right? Do they have the ability to do conflict mitigation and make sure the team's working well together? And this is a few of the things that we think through and we like to see from our internal team members that are maybe been on the team more than a year now, and they've become a really strong tech two or site lead, and we want them to step up to that site manager position.
All of those issues, people management, go away once the humanoids are deployed and work 24/7. charge themselves up next to the ASICs to, I don't know, swap fans the next day.
Come on, Elon.
Yeah, get it together, dude. Shaikh, this is really fair. I have so many questions, but I need to limit myself here. This is a problem with my 45-minute limit that I'm giving myself before people's attention spans fall off a cliff. Vertical integration, I wanted to ask you about, right? That's a common trend. Where margins, of course, as we both know, in the future will always keep declining. People will vertically integrate, and that means doing more of the work yourself, right? Now you're saying, hey, we're a service provider. We are your source to outsourcing this part of the value chain. We operate the site for you. First of all, can you say how much you guys charge? Like, what is the revenue for a site look like? Is that something you can say?
I'm definitely gonna have people calling me after they listen to this, like, where's that cheaper pricing at?
Give me a range.
I would say it really depends. Yeah, it really depends. I think it's important though to talk about how we determine pricing, right? More than just giving you a flat number.
Okay.
Because is this a hydro facility? Is it gonna be an immersion facility? Mm. Is it an air-cooled facility, right? Understanding the implications with those different cooling methods on site, right? Are we running a site that's brand new S21 Pros? Or are we running a site of old S19J Pros, right? I would say we definitely take a lot of different variables into consideration when we come up to our pricing. But we usually charge, if you back it into a dollar per megawatt hour number, right? We're usually anywhere from the $3.50 to $4.50 a megawatt hour range, right?
Okay, and that's just for the operations, because you guys do Correct. Energy trading and stuff like that on the side as well, right? Which we can maybe get into on another show. Okay, so we have that. So now, if margins keep compressing, and let's say, I don't know, hash price goes below 50 again for 6 months, let's say the next bear market, right? People knock on the door. How do you keep your business? Like, how, I mean, of course the machines need to run and you're responsible for that, but how do you protect yourself against the trend of more and more miners building their own capacity out for operations?
Well, at the end of the day, you got to provide a badass service, right? That always comes first. And that's always our number one goal, is providing the best site operation service, because then that question isn't even an option from the client's point of view. Because, hey, they might find a cheaper alternative than what we charge for our pricing to operate their site, but then their machines aren't going to run as good, and their finances and their cash flow is going to take a hit, right? And I think we've seen that with some of our clients. They've maybe brought us into a site where they've had some operational issues. And if we increase a site's operational performance, let's call it 10 to 15% year round, I think our cost is becomes a nuance, right? It's it becomes essential for them having a successful operations, right?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I think if you look at what it takes to operate a site, right, I don't think people want to be managing a large operations team, right? And especially if a client doesn't currently have one, if they want to do that math internally, I think we save them enough time and stress and make sure their fleet's operating good. It becomes a part of a cost that they put into their calculations and the forecast moving forward. Hey, what's it going to cost to operate the site? And at the end of the day, you can only optimize costs so much. At the end of the day, you have to have someone on site operating that facility, right?
Are you still selling your hard mined Bitcoin for expenses like mining hardware, electricity bills, and tax invoices? With Firefish, you can access liquidity in fiat or stablecoins without selling your Bitcoin. Firefish is a peer-to-peer marketplace for non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. No credit checks and no monthly payments. Sign up on Firefish today, create a loan request, deposit BTC into a multisig, get funded by an investor, and repay at the end of the term. Collateral is always at least 2x the loan. So if BTC drops by 50%, you may be liquidated. So be sure at any time to top up the collateral as needed. Thanks to the legends at Firefish for sponsoring the show. Use HashRateUp for a 30% discount on the fees and get your first Bitcoin-backed loan today.
Yeah, plus, I mean, a lot of the, like, with the older models, right, we talk about profit splits a lot. I know the two of us as well, when it comes to certain demand for people in the space and supply and what deals they're looking for. Maybe that's also an option, right? I think maybe in the future, you tell me, we might see something like where you have a base rate and then you get compensated on top of that based on success. And now obviously, you know, mining is all about aligning the incentives. And 10 years down the line, who knows, you know, when Bitcoin mining is more mainstream, even when we're at 2-3 zettahashes or whatever, or 5, then that might be an option as well. But it's interesting. And of course, what your point is very valid. You know, if you're around and you make the site more profitable, so you bring in more revenue, then of course your cost is more than covered and justified. Understood. Marketing, Shaikh, that's also another point where you guys have been really strong. I don't think I know any other mining company in the space that's doing hands-on work on the ground in the mines that has such a strong marketing game. Why was that important? What has that given you guys? Because even now for this interview, I'm sure you don't wear your uniform. We can't see the logo, but I know there's a logo on your chest, and you guys have this like really, really cool apparel going on as well. Tell me about that a bit more. What made you guys go down that route, and what has it given back?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say a year and a half ago, when we first started focusing more on our marketing, it was super instrumental in our growth over the last year and a half. And I do have to shout out the media company that we utilize. It's a really awesome dude named Ryan Harper. That's based at a DFW, Harper Belmont Media.
What is DFW? You got to translate that for my German and European viewers. What is DFW?
Dallas, Fort Worth, right? So based out of Dallas. And we had a great relationship with him. He used to do some other media services in the space. And we met him at a conference, have some other connections in the industry. And we started having a conversation one day of what it looks like if he started helping us with our marketing, doing some on-site shoots. and a lot of what people see today on our LinkedIn, and which has kind of built more of an established name for us in the industry. And I appreciate the kind words that you had to say about that, Jesse. Appreciate the love. A lot of that really was in conversations of working with Ryan and his team of, hey, how can we educate people? And I think that's something that was really important in those conversations was like, hey, instead of just putting up general marketing of, hey, call us if you want our services, right? And it was more of like, hey, how can we make cool content that shows people what a mining facility actually looks like and how it operates? Because I think there are a lot of people on social media that are into Bitcoin mining and they are tracking it. And while they might not be working in the space, I think they're really like seeing a breakdown of, hey, where does the power come from at a site? And we have people say, hey, this is our transformer and this is how it goes and powers the machines. And I think it really was more of like an educational content point of view.
Yeah, but you're also showing that you know what the hell you're talking about. You know, that's also super important. I think you're giving viewers and you're giving the space in general, because everybody will click on these videos, listen for 10 seconds even, or while they scroll past, they will see you and associated with the mine. You know, and let's say you come fresh into the game, you're an investor, you buy a site, you know, now you're trying to think of names that can operate. That's, you know, your name comes up. It sticks. And I don't see you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, having booths at events and stuff like that. Even Mining Disrupt, did you go to Mining Disrupt and have a booth? Or no?
No, we have not done a booth. I don't know if we'll ever do a booth. You know, at conferences, we're always running around, wanting to meet with people, doing offsite meetings and stuff. And those booths are expensive as well, man. And while I do think they can do a good job of getting your name out there, we already know a lot of people at the industry events, and someone's got to sit there and man the booths. We'd rather be, I got people out in the field working. And the ones of us that are lucky enough to attend the events, I would say we're running around through meetings, taking phone calls, and I would hate to invest in a booth and have it sitting there empty. So.
I know we saw each other last in Abu Dhabi at Bitcoin MENA, where you were running around doing what you just said. Do you have site operations outside of the US?
I would say as of right now, no. However, we have been involved in a few projects with different people that are planning on doing site deployments here in the near future. And we are looking at dispatching some of our US-based team to go out there and help them see a smooth deployment and maybe help them train and do some consulting with training their own internal team. And once we help them do site deployment, we'll provide some day-to-day remote monitoring help and be on call for any issues that they might experience in the field. But we absolutely have the ability to be involved with international operations as well.
To anybody who's still listening, and congratulations. I saved this my favorite question that I was going to ask today for last. If you look at the future of Satoki in, like, I don't know, 5 years or whatever, do you guys broaden out and have more revenue streams? Or is it more of a thing where you dial in on what you already have and make that even better? And if it's the second, how do you make your operations even better than they are today?
It's a great question. There was a few questions wrapped into that. So
it's more of like, do you broaden out? Have you specialized, or are you going to specialize more?
I would split Satoki into two different buckets, right? On one end, we have the asset management bucket, and that's the assets that we own and optimize on our balance sheet, right? And then on the second bucket, we have our operations and services arm, right? Where we might not be owning any assets or physical assets in that entity, but that's more of our service business where we're helping our clients grow up and achieve their operational and scaling goals, right? And I'd say we are leaning into the third-party site operations as much as we can, right? There are groups out there that have very meaty goals as far as the amount of hash rate that they want to deploy and the amount of assets they want to manage in the space. And someone has to operate that infrastructure, and it's going to be Satoki. That's our goal. One day, we're going to be operating a gigawatt of Bitcoin mining infrastructure, and so we're leaning into that 1,000%. And I think there are opportunities to go wider in the market with helping clients. I'd say helping someone operationally gives opportunities to help them out in other ways, right? Let's say we have a client that's deploying a 40 megawatt facility in 2 months. We're having other conversations around just us showing up with techs and helping them out. Hey, where are you procuring your infrastructure? Who are you buying your miners from, right? And through these conversations, it's not unique or it's not rare that we find other opportunities or gaps in their development plan to help them out as well. So I'd say as we continue to grow, more of those opportunities arise in the future as well. But also, as we talk about our asset management arm, I've been super focused on building out our site origination team here over the last 6 months. I think long-term, the ability to own land and power capacity on grid is a really awesome asset that we'll continue to appreciate in the future. The same reason we all love Bitcoin, right, is because it's scarce and it's going to increase in value as time goes on. I view it land that has power capacity as the same. And we also have really badass skill set within our team to be able to cash flow and monetize those assets. So, yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
That does answer my question. Last but not least, Shaq, before I give you the floor to shill yourself and shill Satoki and tell people where to find you guys. Satoki mining at 1 gigawatt. How do you keep incentives aligned to keep sites running between the lowest level technician and the highest high up responsible for that whole gigawatt? How do you keep that overview? Because mining and operating sites at nearly 200 gigawatts is entirely different from a gigawatt, right? Or am I wrong?
I would say most of the process of a new site being deployed and us stepping in for that deployment and operations, it's actually pretty similar from case to case, right? It might be different infrastructure or a different team, but at the end of the day, the processes are pretty simple, right? So that's on us continuously working on our standard operating procedures, continuously cross-training our teams and further upskilling our internal teams is super important in that process. However, I don't think the process in the last 6 months of going from 100 megawatts to 200 megawatts isn't going to look very much different from 200 going to a gigawatt, right? We are going to have to build up our management team more. And I think that is where it's super high touch, right? We are super important, or we are, let's call it, we think it's very critical and super important who we bring into our team, right? As I mentioned earlier, culture is very important to us. And making decisions at the maybe entry level isn't as important from a culture decision. But when you're talking about bringing in site managers or regional managers or directors and VPs, those decisions are super critical in making sure you're keeping your culture consistent. And that's what I'm really focused on my end is, hey, how can we continue to add personnel and people to the team while still making sure our cultural values that have allowed us to be successful up to this point will bring us to that gigawatt mark.
Love it, man. Tell people where to find you.
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn at Shaik Lowers and check out our Satoki Mining page. Also, please reach out to me at Telegram at Shaik Mines. Please throw that up for me on the screen there, Jesse. And anyone that is looking to grow their operations, whether you're looking for sites, you know, building your site, or you're considering bringing in an operations team, please reach out to us and we'd love to have a discussion with how we can provide value for you and your goals.
I'll reiterate that. Anybody who follows this content will be interested in what you guys are doing on your social media as well. So if you're listening to this and made it to this point, make sure to click on the link in the box below. Find Satoki, find their content. It's well worth listening. Thank you, Shaik, for your time on this beautiful Sunday evening for
you.
Thank
you, sir.
You have your Sunday in front of you. I hope it's a good one. All right. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, brother.
Bye.